Next case for argument is United States v. Valfin. Ms. Gamirez.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Rose Lindsay Gamirez of the Federal Defender Program for Mr. Petrovalk and the appellant. The district court erred when it determined that Mr. Valkin did not qualify for a mitigating role. I wanted to clarify what conduct we're looking at. As the court noted in our reply brief, we modified our position slightly when we submitted the reply. And so we are asking this court to consider the scope of conduct comprising Mr. Valkin's offense of conviction, which is the preparation of false passports and his use of those to commit money laundering. So that's the narrower scope that we're asking the court to consider. As the court is well aware, under the mitigating role guideline, the central inquiry in this type of a situation is whether Mr. Valkin was substantially less culpable than the average participant. And in order to assess whether he was substantially less culpable than the average participant.
So are you looking for what, a two-level decrease or four-level or what?
We didn't specify in the district court, but we are asking for at least a two-level reduction. So, yes, for purposes of argument, I'll say that we're asking for a minor role, two-level reduction.
And then you want the minimum sentence, the 30 months.
Yes, we had asked for the low end of the guidelines. To assess, you know, what the average participant is and whether Mr. Valkin's conduct is substantially less culpable than the average participant, it's important to note
is
some...
Is that clear? We don't know much about the other. The other participants are shadowy. But the offense is money laundering, and he played a very important role, and he made $70,000, so... Substantial.
This court has emphasized...
He exercised discretion in these forgeries. And
his discretion was actually very, very limited. If we look at the overall relationship between Valkin and the other shadowy participants, we can discern certain important factors here. First of all, he was directed at every turn. There was communication through text. So the first key thing here is that his knowledge was incredibly limited. He didn't know whom he was communicating with. He didn't know what their activities were. He didn't know how many of them there were. He didn't know for sure whether they were even in Romania. He didn't know where the money was ultimately going once he transferred it.
I don't see the relevance of that. I mean, obviously, these people do not want to give him the kind of information which would enable him to blackmail them or turn them in to the authorities. I don't know why keeping someone in the dark makes him a minor participant.
I think based on this court's precedents, particularly United States versus Lyskunas, this court emphasized that the relationship between the parties is very important in assessing relative roles. And again, the ultimate inquiry here is a relative role.
That's not responsive to what I'm saying. I don't see why, if you have a criminal gang in which the members try to conceal their identities from each other, I don't see why that makes them minor participants.
The level of knowledge or the lack thereof is actually addressed in the mitigating role guideline as very relevant to...
Why?
The guideline itself says for purposes of a minimal participant...
Well, why, I'm asking you?
It's a reflection of the relationship among the parties.
Well, I don't get it. I don't understand why concealing the identity of your co-conspirators has anything to do with whether you're a minor or major participant.
It's one piece of a bigger puzzle.
I don't understand that. You have to give me a reason why it's relevant.
It's relevant because it's one part of several factors.
No, it's not relevant because if you're in a criminal gang, of course you want to conceal information about yourself from the others.
Absolutely.
These Romanians are probably concealing information from each other, but you wouldn't say they're the minor participants.
If we see that certain participants are not given even basic knowledge about the workings of the conspiracy...
I don't get that.
It
what if you hire a hitman, and all you say to the hitman is, I want you to go kill X. You don't tell him why. You don't tell him anything. You don't tell him your name. He's not a minor participant. You look at what he does, not what he knows about the other people. And this fellow is their U.S. money launderer, right?
And yet, if we look at his conduct in relation to what his co-schemers had to have done also in order to make this happen, there is a disparity in terms of what he was actually accomplishing versus what they were accomplishing.
Are you saying they didn't accomplish anything without him?
They actually accomplished quite a bit. They had to actually have passports.
What could they do in the United States without him?
Well, they couldn't accomplish anything they wanted to without first putting
what
a very
realistic... What could they accomplish
realistic
in the United States without him?
They put false passports in his hands.
What could they do without him?
Without him in this particular offense, they could not have had the money transferred back to him. That is correct. However, this court has repeatedly said...
They could have made a dime in the United States without him.
Yeah, not if he didn't have passports that they put in his hands. You're correct. They could not have received any money from him. They certainly could have had other people working for them as well. But with respect to Mr. Valkan, he first needed to have false passports put into his hands. And those passports passed off as genuine because they were manufactured very professionally with high-tech equipment or who knows what they used, but they had the security features.
The hitman is a minor participant if his principal gives him the gun.
I'm sorry, could the court repeat that? I didn't.
Now you're going to say the hitman is a minor participant if his principal gives him the gun.
Not necessarily. This court has repeatedly said that it's a totality of the circumstances inquiry.
I don't like the phrase totality of the circumstances. That's just...
Yeah. It's a simple way of saying there are many factors we need to weigh together. Knowledge is one of them.
Well, I don't think that helps you because if you have one of these fuzzy multi-factor tests, you leave it to the judge.
In the district court, the judge looked at Mr. Valkan's knowledge, and he used Valkan's knowledge, not what he didn't know, but what he did know. That was one of the court's reasons for the denying the...
He identified with what he didn't know, and I don't see the slightest relevance of that.
Under the guidelines, the guidelines actually suggest for us that a lack of knowledge about the workings of co-conspirators is suggestive of, but not a definitive indicator of, a suggestion of a minimal role.
It sounds like you're saying that if he's not an organizer or leader, manager, what have you, then he gets a minor participant.
Not at all. That's actually a slightly different analysis. We are certainly saying he was not a leader, but we're actually trying to look at his relationship to what we would call the average participant. And all of these terms are somewhat murky in how they're applied under the guidelines, but in essence here, there are several factors that would suggest his role was minimal.
This question is, I think, very important. That anybody who is not an organizer or leader or supervisor or manager doesn't know as much as the people above him. And yet they're not automatically minor participants. In fact, they're rarely minor participants.
This court in United States versus Sands actually talked about the hierarchy of drug conspiracies and talked about drug couriers. And this court actually explained that Even drug couriers, you know, there are different levels of drug couriers. There are some with significant knowledge, significant decision-making authority. And there are some who are simply paid a minimal amount to do a discrete task. And in under these facts, I think we can take those analogies from this court and actually compare Mr. Valkin to a lower-level drug courier. He was moving money.
He got $70,000. I guess part of the problem that I have here is, as I understand it, the burden of proof is on the defendant on this, correct?
Yes.
And we just don't know very much. Suppose there are 19 conspirators in Romania who are all getting 5% of the proceeds. Right?
Right.
He looks like an equal participant based on that very simple measurement, right?
Right.
And given the lack of information, why was the district judge required to find a minor role here?
He was certainly not required. He had his discretion to weigh all the factors, but...
If he's not required, then where's the error?
Well, the error, I have to back up there, because under the analysis that he should have gone through, yes, we're saying that he was required. Because if we look at what the co-conspirators had to accomplish versus what Mr. Valkin had to accomplish, he received a passport into his hands that was already crafted with his photograph and everything. He was directed at every turn how to use that, where to use it, what name to put on it, and then he was told, okay, whatever transaction you do, you get a mere 5% cut. All of these things suggest that though he was necessary to the transfer of that money, he was, from the perspective of his co-conspirators, whether there was one or 20, again, we don't know.
Doesn't that make a difference?
I don't think it does if we look at the fact that what we do know suggests what was happening with the other co-conspirators. They were actually manufacturing the passports that he had to use. Valkin was not doing that. He was adding names on once he received them and then doing a simple transaction at a Western Union. And so if we look at what had to be happening behind the scenes with people we don't know versus what Valkin had to do, those factors suggest that his role was minimal compared to his co-conspirators. And they even viewed his conduct as less because they said, well, we want only a 5% cut for you. They valued his participation at 5%.
That's compared to the whole fraud.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I see that my time has expired.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Ramirez. Mr. Flanagan?
May it please the Court. My name is Peter Flanagan. I represent the United States. The district court properly denied the defendant's request for a mitigating role adjustment. The defendant was the money launderer for a fraudulent scheme to sell non-existent cars. He forged hundreds of passports.
How did you guys catch him?
He was caught. It's not in the record, I suppose, but I can inform the court the details behind it.
I was curious.
DHL... A package containing the false passports that was addressed to Mr. Valkin was waiting for him at a hotel for a bit longer in the Northern District of Illinois. The hotel had the package a little bit longer than expected and gave it back to DHL, and DHL opened up the package, not at the request of the government at all or the direction of the government. Government wasn't aware of it until DHL called and reported the
stack of passports.
Exactly.
With blank names. Okay.
But his activity didn't just involve forging hundreds of passports, the stenciling. It also involved him actually walking in and presenting these passports to hundreds of different wire company employees, passing them off as genuine, lying about his identity, and disposing of approximately $1.4 million in fraudulent proceeds. He did exercise discretion, independently assessing the quality of his passports before he presented them. He traveled from city to city across the United States to conceal this crime.
When he would pick up some wires, about what quantities were they?
As defense counsel notes, each wire was approximately, on average, I think around $3,000. However, he wouldn't just get one $3,000 wire in one day. He also admitted to collecting two or three wires in one day. So at any given time, he could be in possession of about $10,000 worth of money. In fact, he was apprehended in possession of $12,400, which, if he were to just walk away, that goes to the trust that his co-conspirators right. showed, because he could have walked away with about over 14% of his overall take in nearly six months' time, in just one day. So, and he did do this for over the course of 6 months, which shows his prolonged commitment to this crime.
Now, these forged passports, what were they used for exactly?
Just to prove his identity. He would be given his co-conspirators.
It has his picture on it.
It has his picture.
His multiple identities. And what does he do with one of his identities? He shows this to whom?
He's directed as to which wire company to go to in which city by his co-conspirators. He goes in, presents the passport to the Western Union employee. It's got his picture, a name that he stenciled onto it, and says, "I'm here to collect my money." Then he would take that, and then once he had the money, he also had a different...
His money, how? Because it's...
It was wired to the attention of the false identity that he stenciled onto the passport.
So as part of the fraud, they would tell the victims, wire $4,000 to right. so-and-so at thus and such.
Yeah, yes, and likely what happened here is that they were posing as that same person, the person that was selling the non-existent car, and say, you know, you can wire it to me at this location. And then he had a second set of passports that were foreign-based documents from foreign countries that he would use with a separate identity and wire that money from the United States to various locations in Romania to his co-conspirators. So, and he did all of this knowing that he was involved in a fraudulent scheme, that his actions were in furtherance of a fraudulent scheme. These were significant acts of criminal conduct, and they were performed repeatedly. The minor role adjustment, it's intended for defendants who don't do much. This defendant did a lot. The district court assessed all that the defendant did as a whole in denying the mitigating role adjustment. And having done so, it did not clearly err in denying that reduction. So unless the court has any additional questions for me, I will respectfully ask that you affirm the defendant's sentence.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Flanagan. Ms. Guimaraes, do you have anything further?
It is important to note that in United States versus Lyskunas, this court did emphasize that a repeated act and also an act that may be necessary to the completion of the crime, they are not necessarily prohibitors to applying the mitigating role reduction. And here, if Vulcan had only done this once, I think it might be a lot easier for us to see that he simply conducted a wire transaction at Western Union when his co-conspirators prepared everything for him in order for him to do that. And so if we were to look at one single transaction, I think it becomes more clear. And so I just wanted to emphasize the fact that this court has emphasized that a repeated act and the ultimate total loss amount that may come from repeating that simple act doesn't necessarily preclude
right.
a reduction.
Did this district judge ever indicate that he thought the role was barred as a matter of law?
He did indicate in denying the reduction, he did say part of his reasoning was that the act was repeated multiple times.
That's relevant, right?
Yes.
He didn't indicate he thought it was barred as a matter of law, though.
No, he did not.
Okay.
He did not. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Guimaraes. And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
We thank you for your efforts on behalf of your client.